Hey, what's up? This is Mario with Rugged 33 Podcast. Super stoked today because I have Pavel on the podcast today. And say what's up, Pavel.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Tell him what's up in Russian.
Say it again.
I said, tell him what's up in Russian.
Как дела, ребята? Всем привет.
Dude, I have been actually brushing up on my Russian. A lot of my students, you know, they mostly speak Russian, a little bit Kyrgyz, but yeah. Today's show, though, I'm excited because we're gonna talk about basically introduce Pavel, which I call Pablo. He's my first Russian friend. He's actually was born in Kyrgyzstan. But he's Russian, and so it's pretty cool meeting him. We met through one of my colleagues, and so I asked him to come on the show because I was really interested on growing up Russian in Kyrgyzstan and what that meant, the fall of the USSR, and just all the amazing things about being Russian. And today's show is about contrast. It's not about what's better, East, West, USSR versus America. It's basically, we're just trying to share how much different we are and how much the same we are. So welcome to the show, Pablo.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to do the show. Let's do it.
Yeah, no problem. The funny thing is I had actually met I never actually met a Russian person. I've only seen John Wick, Rocky IV,
right,
and of course Red Dawn in the 80s. And but what my first experience with a Russian guy was, you know, meeting one is I was in Narin. And so we're sitting down having breakfast, and I was trying to have conversation with him. He spoke really good English, but he was like really quiet, really like robotic.
Yeah, I see what. Yeah,
you know,
that's pretty much how many Russians are.
Right. Yeah. And then when I met you, it was like we clicked, we talked, and both of us are actually introverts. But you know, we get along pretty good. So you know, growing up in Kyrgyzstan and in being Russian, how does that work? Because it's like, you know, in America, we're like, oh, you're American. Yeah, you're Mexican American, but you're American. And I've noticed Russian people, they hold on to theirs. Uzbek people hold on to their identity. If you could just help us out understanding that.
Right. Yeah. Just like a fun fact, if you will, before I get into like the details. So whenever the passport, right, back in the USSR, they would write down your ethnicity in the passport, which is really weird, right? So like you're a citizen of the USSR, but they would write down like Russian, you know, or Kyrgyz or Uzbek, or, you know, even I think German, whatever your ethnicity is. So that's already kind of suspicious, right? Like they're trying to differentiate between the different ethnicities within the state. So this is, and then as you said, indeed, people would try to stick with their people. Like you would see Russian communities, and you would, you know, see of course Kyrgyz communities and all the other, you know, minorities within the country. But the thing is that when I was growing up in my small hometown where I'm coming from, like the majority of people were Russian. Like my memories are that you know, like maybe 95% of people were Russian around me. When I was at the school in my class, I think out of, let's say, 20 people, you would have maybe one Kyrgyz guy, maybe a couple German guys, right? One, two Jewish guys, the rest were Russians or Ukrainians as well. But when the USSR collapsed and over time, the balance changed, and now you have the opposite, like in a class, you would maybe have one Russian person out of like 20, 30 people.
Because before the collapse, there were so many Russians here, correct?
Right. Oh, yeah, and yeah, then, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the interesting part, is because now, like what you're saying is, when I walk into the classroom, maybe there's one Russian kid.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You're teaching, so you have the firsthand experience of what I'm saying.
Yeah. So how was it? Like, so you're 11 years old. It's like what, December 91 when the collapse happened?
Yeah, right.
Somewhere around there.
I was born in 1980, and when the USSR collapsed, I was 11. So I think I have pretty good memory of what I was, a child, but you know, kind of teenager.
Yeah,
it was pretty bad. It's like you have a system, everything was working, people knew what they would do the next day, you know, everything was, you know, everyone was like comfortable to an extent, and then it's all gone in literally in a day, right? And everyone was in shock. People didn't know what to do. I mean, the majority of the people, they didn't know. Of course, you would have like more entrepreneurial people, and they would see like huge opportunities in it. But like the majority of people were really lost, and things were falling apart, so to say. People lost their jobs and so on. Yeah.
Yeah, I like the way you described it. We had conversation before, and you're like, it was like the zombie apocalypse without zombies. And then later on, you're like, no, there were some zombies, because people, they didn't survive it. They lost everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was like that. Like you go to a shop, it's just empty. Like the shelves are empty. And you would have maybe one product and a limited supply of it, and you have to stand in a long queue to get some of it. I don't know, maybe sugar, you know, or like some grain or like an oil. And you would always have to, you have to know when, what type of product will be available when, and then you have to make sure that you come by then, and you again stay in the queue and you get your small portion of whatever it is, you know, maybe bread or maybe sugar or like the basic goods, you know.
Yeah, you said one of your memories was seaweed.
Yeah, it was weird. Like you would have cans of seaweed, like canned seaweed, and you would have like pyramids built out of those cans, and it was like kind of surreal. Okay. You come in the shop, you see like this pyramid on the shelf built out of canned seaweed, and like, okay.
Wow. Yeah, what are you going to do with seaweed? Yeah. Huh?
And what do you do? You just come back next day and hopefully you would have something else, you know. Yeah. And the supply chains were completely like disrupted.
So before the fall, before the collapse of USSR, what did life look like? So you described how it was when the collapse, but when you went to the store, because I think that's interesting. In America, we have like so many different varieties. Like, let's just say ice cream, because any Russian person, old person that I've talked to, or Kyrgyz Russian, they're like, the ice cream was amazing. You know, and I'm like, well, how many flavors did you have? And they're like, oh, we only had like 3 or 4, but it was really, really good ice cream.
Right. I mean, ice cream is just one example of a product. Okay, you, I mean, it's good. It was good. Excuse me. It was good, but the variety wasn't there. Like you had maybe two, three options and that's it. And that applied to virtually any kind of good. You would have like maybe five models of cars, or you would have maybe two types of bread, you know. And I think it boils down to the fact that the economy was like planned. Everything was planned, and of course, on such a grand scale, you cannot plan all these millions of different types of goods, right? You can only plan for maybe two, three types of ice creams, right? Like, well, we have to produce so many, I don't know, tons of ice cream per like per town or per city or per region. I think it was impossible to plan everything. I mean, maybe now with, you know, with the advancements in the technology, it would have been possible, but still, it sounds kind of weird. But back then, yeah, I think it was done maybe mostly manually, and yeah, the variety was not there basically. Yeah.
And then because I was telling you, I'm like, dude, we got like 31 flavors in, in America. And again, I want everybody to understand this is not comparison, it's just contrast. Like
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to let people understand like what that looked like, at that time.
Yeah.
About like you gave me this example about cars, like
Yeah.
how, they only made a certain amount of cars.
Yeah, right. Like you have maybe, I don't know the exact number, but for one type of car, you have one plant located in somewhere in Russia, right? And so they would do some kind of calculation. Okay, look, we have, I don't know, 200 million people. Not every family is going to have a car. So let's say only 10% of those people will have a car. And so they would produce a certain number of cars, but it's just the same kind of car. And they would distribute. And to get the car, it wasn't that easy. Even if you had the money, and most people wouldn't even have the money to afford the car, but the people who had the money, they couldn't just go and buy like that. They had to wait in a queue. You know, there was kind of like a virtual queue, and let's say you're number 1,550 something, right? And only, I don't know, 300 people can get a car per year. It means like you have to wait for 5 years before you can actually get the car, you know?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because yeah, the supply was limited, I think.
Wow. That's crazy. That's crazy. So, growing up, like, because now you're an IT guy, and so growing up in USSR and then seeing the transition going through that, how do you think that affected you, man? Like, I mean, you're obviously a really intelligent guy, you're an IT guy.
I think that transition made me much more resilient. Like, you know, ups and downs don't bother me, don't scare me that much, because me, just like many other, like many millions of people, I've been through this shock of like changing from one system to another. I think now I'm much more resilient, and I'm, you know, like kind of more philosophical about life. Oh, you're talking about crisis. Yeah, but you know, shops are full of products. That doesn't sound like crisis to me. I think I'm good, you know.
I remember when we had pyramid seaweed,
Right, yeah, and empty shelves. And so I think, yeah, I just adopted that mentality that, you know, as long as you have something to eat and you know, places to visit, and you have, I don't know, as long as you can have fun in your life, life is not too bad, you know.
At the time of the collapse, what's your like maybe not fondest memory, but what do you remember, the most? What stands out to you the most?
Oh, yeah, I think we talked about it. So I had this interesting experience, and I think it was my first entrepreneurial experience, if you will. So I think it was 1992. The was in a really bad shape. My father didn't have a job. My mom also couldn't really work, and somehow my father decided, oh, we have a train station, and the people who are passing by, they usually stop and they get out of the train and they buy things like cigarettes or lemonade or vodka. And so he thought, okay, I can buy all this stuff somewhere and then I can resell it at the train station. But I don't think he was very entrepreneurial, and he was kind of shy about that, I think. And so he took me as kind of like a companion. Hey, let's go, let's do this. Okay, whatever. And so I also started doing this, like buying things and reselling them. And I kind of took to it. I started liking it because I could have my pocket money, out of it.
What would you buy? What do you remember?
I would buy cigarettes. I would buy vodka. I was 12 at the time. I could, can
Dang,
you imagine,
you were
I could easily
smoking?
buy vodka. No one cared. It was like kind of like Wild West, kind of. And so yeah, I did that. My father stopped because I think he didn't see it as a like a big thing for himself. And but I think for a kid, it was like a really fun little experience, just being in a new type of economy where you can buy things, you can resell things. This in the Soviet Union, you couldn't just buy and resell things and make a profit out of it. It was like you would go to jail for this, which sounds, yeah, sounds crazy now, but it was the reality back then. Everything was provided by the state. You couldn't buy things in one place, go to some other region and resell them. It wasn't allowed.
That's crazy. Yeah, because it the fall of USSR, it was the transition to the market economy,
Exactly, yeah.
which that was the only way that you guys could survive, man. You know,
Right.
and until things started picking up. So how long did you see the empty shelves and the long queues? And when he says queues to the West, he's talking about lines.
Yeah,
So
line.
we, yeah. So how long did you see the empty shelves until the economy started getting better? It started, you know, being somewhat normal to what it is now.
Well, let me think. My memory might not be like very good, but I would say 5 to 10 years. Like the abundance was, I think it took maybe at least 10 years for people to really to start seeing all this variety of goods in the shops. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I was reading some facts about it. It was talking about Western companies once the fall happened, and it was an open economy, that Western companies like Coca-Cola, McDonald's, IKEA, Western brands opened up branches in Russia.
There is a really, I would say, almost an iconic photo from back then. Maybe it was 1991 or 1992. We can check this out later. But it's opened its first, restaurant in Moscow, and the line was huge. It was like really, it's like a 1 mile line of people just buy McDonald's, because they couldn't before. Now they can, now they could, and so everyone was like lining up to get their McBurger. It was insane. I guess McDonald's made good money back then.
They're raking it in Moscow, huh? The crazy thing is, we don't even have McDonald's here. You know, I think the closest one is Kazakhstan in Almaty. But I heard that because of everything that's going on, that they're closing them down. I'm not sure if that's true. You guys could fact check me. The last time you were in El Monte, did you see it? Were they open?
I didn't see McDonald's because I wasn't like looking for it.
Oh, okay.
Nothing more like I saw Pizza Hut, I saw KFC, of course.
Yeah.
Burger King is there for sure.
Yeah. Starbucks.
Starbucks, yeah, Starbucks.
Yeah, they have Carl's Jr. I was really surprised. I was like, wow. Or they call it Hardee's, I think. But
Yeah.
so I know world traveler, you like to travel. But at the same time, traveling outside the USSR when you were a part of the USSR, what did that look like?
Well, back then, being a child, I couldn't travel much, but
Yeah.
nobody could travel outside of the country unless they had like a special permission to go outside.
You needed a special permit, right?
Yeah, the people needed a special permit, and it wasn't really easy to obtain one. Even if you're like a celebrity, you still needed this, permit to go out. Because there was a risk of people defecting. Like, you can compare it to modern day North Korea. Like, people are not allowed outside of the country because they defect, because life
Yeah.
is so much better outside. So, I think for the same reason, people were not allowed to
Yeah.
go. I mean, there was like the Eastern Bloc. I think it was easier to get into a country like Bulgaria or, Czechoslovakia back then, or Poland, but
You wanted to go to the beautiful beaches of Bulgaria?
yeah, I mean,
I'm just kidding.
yeah, there are
Because
some
you're
resorts as far as I know, and people went there, but again, not everyone could do that because
yeah.
not everyone could afford that. I think it
Afford
cost
it.
quite a bit of money, yeah.
Yeah, because even here now, like the average, that a Kyrgyz family lives off of, I think it was like 300 to 350 US a month. The
Yeah,
last
I
time that I
think
checked.
that's about right. Yeah, it's not more
Yeah.
than that, definitely. The
Yeah.
average is like that.
So, yeah. Sorry, man. I don't, I think I'm getting sick. Well, actually, I know I'm getting sick. I had a fever like the other day, and so I feel like I have a scratch in my throat, but we'll just continue on. So the
Yeah.
fall happens, then there's basically like the birth of freedom of speech, but then it didn't last long. And as I was reading about it, I was just like, it's so interesting because even with the war right now, I know that there's journalists and protesters that, man, they've been detained or arrested, some have been killed. And but for a time, I mean, you've probably seen a transition from when you were in the USSR, even with media. And now you have Instagram, you have Facebook, you have all these other things. Like, talk to me about that. Like, what does that look like for you? Are you just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing,
I mean, yeah, back then you would have nothing of that. And I mean, freedom of speech, like people were even thinking about that. People were like hungry for like all these, basic stuff like Coca-Cola or burgers or like nice looking clothes or like a pair of jeans. I think it took people a bit of time to kind of satisfy this hunger and then think about like how would you say it, like think about like higher level ideas like freedom of speech,
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think maybe in the early 2000s, that's when people were like realizing that, oh, we have freedom of speech, freedom of movement, and people started earning a bit of more money and they could, travel and do all those things. But in the 90s, no one even, I think, didn't even think or care about those ideas.
Oh,
People were
you're
trying to
just thinking,
survive, you know.
right? No, that totally makes sense. You're just trying to survive. You're just going through the collapse, trying to put food on the table. You were telling me that your family, your grandparents were a little bit more well off as far as, they could grow their own food and stuff like that.
I think it was like, it wasn't just my grandparents. I think it was just a general pattern. Like that generation, I think since they saw like the World War II, maybe they didn't, they were teenagers back then, but still the times were really tough back then. And the collapse of the USSR, I think they were not as shocked as their kids were, because they had seen worse than that. And so they were more adapted to life. And my grandparents, for example, they had a plot of land where they could grow their stuff, tomatoes and whatnot, and they could feed themselves and they could feed the family. Whereas my parents, in comparison, I think they were really lost. They had no idea how to, how to live, how what to do next, to survive. And it was really
No,
challenging for them.
and speaking about that generation, I was reading and I didn't know that the Russians actually freed more concentration camps during World War II than all the Allies put together. Did you
Whoa.
know that?
No, but yeah. I mean,
Yeah, no,
makes
I was
sense.
just, it makes sense to you. You're like, that's how Russians do
Yeah, right.
it.
Go all in, huh?
No, like I mean, I'm not surprised. I heard of this before, but when I started looking at facts, because just that generation, how you were talking about, like our grandparents, they went through World War II, Korean War. My grandpa was in the army and he went to Korean War. He was in Korea. He said that it was so, excuse me. He said that it was so cold there that people would actually freeze to death.
Oh man, that's so bad.
And so they didn't have time to, like, they were just brothers. They, it didn't matter what color you were, where you were from, they were just brothers. And so when I started doing research, about USSR and some of the amazing things that the Russians were a part of, especially during World War II, I was like, wow, man, like they put in work. And it was funny, me and Bushta, we tease each other about this, about World War II, because she was born in France, and so I jokingly say, if it wasn't for us, you guys, talking about the French, you guys would be speaking German. And then she's like, whatever, if it wasn't for the, her, if it wasn't for the Russians, I'm like, yeah, them too, them too. It was a joint force, so it's pretty funny. But no, man, Russia put in work in World War II. The crazy thing. Oh, go ahead.
The way they're teaching history they were teaching history in the Soviet Union. Oh, like the Soviet Union won the war, If it wasn't for the Soviet Union, yeah, indeed, we all would have been like speaking German now, But the reality is not like that. It was much more complicated. And for example, there was the Lend-Lease program from the US, which I found out just recently, I also believed, oh yeah, like if it wasn't for the USSR, the Germans would have taken over. I mean, the Nazis, not the Germans, sorry. And yeah, but yeah, it was a joint effort indeed.
Okay, so why is there so many women in comparison to men?
Where?
Because it, or even in Kyrgyzstan and around USSR states, because 80% of the men died at that time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I'm
A lot
like,
of
what the?
a lot of young men, ages, I don't know, 16 to 35, 40, a lot of them died in the war.
Yeah. Interesting.
Because I think the way the Soviets were fighting and, the chain of command kind of was operating is that we don't care how many people die. We just want to win,
Yeah.
And
That's what I'm
yeah, they
saying. You
weren't
guys were
trying
all
to
in.
save the lives of the soldiers. They didn't care. They
Yeah.
just wanted a win, no matter what. Like no matter how people die.
Wow. Yeah.
That's fortunate. It's very sad, but that was the way the war was on the Soviet side.
Yeah. Okay. So, what's the crazy? What is the most interesting? Or, okay, how about we do this? A negative thing that you heard about the US, and maybe it's true, I don't know. Like when you were a kid, like what was the most like shocking to you?
Well, the truth is that there was so little information about, that I didn't really know much about the US. I mean, to me, the craziest thing was that, oh, everyone could buy like a pair of jeans. It was like the easiest thing to do, which was amazing. People didn't have jeans in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
It was such a
Wow.
luxury that few people could afford it. I mean, you couldn't even find it because in the USSR, it had from the outside, and which only the elite of the elite could do because they could go outside and kind of smuggle stuff from there.
Yeah, the same thing for us is in our history books, we didn't, there wasn't much, you know, and it wasn't like for us, like my generation, I don't know about my grandparents or my dad's, but for my generation, there wasn't much. It was like we're in the Cold War against them. They're our rivals, and that's really it. You know what I'm saying? And it's difficult to get inside to USSR because I remember I was wrestling on a club team for USA Wrestling, on a club team. I was a kid, and they were taking kids from USA to Russia to wrestle, to have a
That's
meet.
interesting.
Yeah. And so I wanted to go so bad, and my parents were like, no, you're not going, you know? And it wasn't like, oh, because we don't like Russian people. It was just like, no, we're not going because we can't go, you know, they couldn't go with us. But it was really interesting. And, you know, I just didn't have a bad thought about the Russians. I just didn't know much. I knew that basically, you guys couldn't travel, you couldn't go anywhere, you didn't have many options, and that was really about it. And it was communist, and which I didn't even know at that time what that meant. You know what I'm saying? N now, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say that, well, communism is what people were trying to build. It was kind of like a society. Communism is a utopia, but yeah, this is something people believed in, I think. I mean, some of the people believed in, like, they're
I
trying to
see.
build communistic society, which was ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because we were talking about some of the contrasts in the United States now, and you know, here in Kyrgyzstan, like I was telling you guys, like if somebody bangs on my door, I'm like, what the heck is going on? You know what I'm saying? Like nobody called me, nobody, I'm not expecting anyone. Why is somebody banging on my door? And after me and you and our friends had that conversation yesterday, I had two bangs on my door and I thought about it. Like, I'm just gonna look through the people and be like, who is it? And it was a cleaning lady. And then the second one was my neighbor. He wanted to borrow a knife.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Just to me is sounds a bit annoying. Like, why do you disturb? I don't know you. You know why you? I mean, I can't imagine why the cleaning lady was banging on the door. Maybe she wanted to get some warm water, like
Yeah.
to clean the floors, right? This is kind of common, but it's like a bit annoying, honestly. But it is what it is.
It was fine, but it's like it like the, I didn't tell you the rest of the part is like 2 months ago somebody tried to kick in my son's door of his home.
Oh.
Yeah, when he was home. Thank God he was home. He had called in sick. He's home with his family and he scared the people away.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so contrast, you know, it's just like
Right.
when here, when I walk the streets at night with friends, I feel really safe. I know
Yeah.
nothing's gonna go down. I see like girls walking by themselves at night in
Yeah.
like a park, you know? And I'm
Yeah.
like, oh my. Little
In
kids
the
walking
USSR,
around to school. What was that?
I mean, in the USSR, it was even much more safer than it is now. Like, it was really safe. I don't know how it worked. It's just people were not indifferent, let's say. I mean, if you cry for help, people would come and help you, you know? Now,
Yeah.
if something is happening, you're like, oh, help. You know, you're not guaranteed that some people or anyone would actually come to your help. So, but it's
I
still, yeah,
was,
Bishkek is quite safe compared to many other places.
dude, it's amazing. Even if you go to like a cafe or you go to a sports pub, you know, like it's everybody's chill, you know, everybody's chill. So I
Yeah.
don't, I never feel like I'm gonna get into a fight or I don't feel threatened or anything like that. Now, maybe if I'm what, because it's fact here. Like maybe if I'm walking with a Kyrgyz woman at night and there's drunk Kyrgyz guys, you know what
Yeah.
I'm saying? So
Yeah.
I just stopped talking because sometimes I could pass for Kyrgyz, you know? So I'll just
Right.
stop talking and then we'll just keep on walking and we'll go to the next destination. But for the
Right.
most part, it's so chill here, man.
Yeah, it's pretty chill. Yeah. You mentioned our common friend Bushra, and so she often tells me, why are you staring at people? And I do have this kind of like tendency to look at people just because I'm curious, you know, I'm curious about people, what they're looking like. And I didn't think about that, but indeed, like it might come across as like weird in some other places, and I would maybe get into a lot of trouble staring at people like that, you know.
Yeah.
But here it's like okay-ish kind of. So no, I had no issues with that so far. So
Yeah. No. I mean, I haven't noticed that part. I think some of the contrast, some of the differences are is like I was telling you is personal space,
yeah,
you know,
right.
or the use of excuse me,
Oh yeah.
or cutting
Yeah.
in line in a queue, you know.
Yeah.
This is very normal, you know.
Yeah. One of the, you know, great things about the American culture is that politeness is really important. Like when you ask for something, you say, please, you know, could you please this and that. Here, people are quite rude. Like, okay, let's say you go out and there is someone coming in and you go out and you hold the door for them. There is no like thank you. Most of the time for me it's like, okay, you're welcome, you know. Or you go into like a shop and just observing, and I see like people just don't say hello to the cashier, you know. It doesn't cost much to say hello, you know. No, people, most of the people don't do that, and I don't know why.
It's just contrasting. It really, when I first got here, I was like, what's up with this guy, man? Or this person, whoever cut in line or the queue. But the cool thing is, I think a lot of people start to is like you said, they're just interested. It seems like they're interested in what's different, And especially with me, I mean, I sort of stand out. I've never met one Mexican here. I've heard of another one.
Oh, really?
And yeah, he's actually a director at one of the schools here.
Oh,
And
you guys should.
and I hear and then the tattoos, it's a Muslim country. There's not a lot of people with tattoos. So I noticed more Russians have tattoos,
Yeah, I see what it means.
Since the influx of the war, where it's like, I think last time it was like 60,000 Russians came through, I seen way more Russian people and way more tattoos,
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Because these are like people, who it's like middle class people, let's say, they're,
Oh, I see.
yeah, like they have the money to escape, and, it's like culturally they're a bit closer to, I think, the Western values, and tattoos, one of them, freedom of expression or whatever. So I'm not surprised that, yeah.
Hey, Papala, do you have a tattoo?
I don't. I've been thinking
No,
about
you.
getting one. I even
Oh,
have, like,
dang.
yeah.
You can go Russian gangster or what? Like all black, like prison Russian style or what?
No, I'll start slowly. I'll get one. I have an idea for one. Like, in the USSR, everything that was made in the USSR, maybe not everything, but most of the things, but they had this like kind of interesting logo that would say made in the USSR. And so I want that on my body, saying, meaning that I was made in the USSR,
I
It's a bit
see, I
silly,
get it.
but whatever.
Yeah, no, we have a stamp like that. It says Hecho in Mexico, and a lot of people have this, made in Mexico. We have this, a lot of people have it tattooed, but I find it interesting. One of the about tattoos is during USSR time, it was illegal to shoot or break an idol of a leader and of like Stalin or Marx. So what the prisoners would do is they would tattoo themselves with the leaders of USSR on like their chest or somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, not surprised. I mean, in prison, very like strong tattoo culture, and tattoo cannot just do it because you might get into trouble. But now it's much kind of easier. It's all kinds of tattoos.
Hey, did you get a chance to watch that comedian Bert Kreischer about the machine?
No, I don't
I
think
haven't
so.
sent I haven't sent it to you. I sent to you Bobby Lee. He's hilarious, right?
Bubbly is funny.
He's an underrated comedian. They want him to do a
Really?
Netflix special, but he has
Oh.
like crazy anxiety. Like he doesn't think good of himself, and so he refuses to do one.
Oh man, that's so sad. He's so hilarious. He's so funny. I don't know. His jokes are cool. He should do one. I don't know.
He's hilarious, man. So, but the Bert Kreischer one, where he takes Russian just so he could pass, and he ends up going and hanging out with the Russian mafia. It's hilarious. I'll send it to you. It's really funny. But hey, we're coming to an end, man. It's 44 minutes we've been talking. The Rugged 33 listeners, we had to do it again because the sound didn't come out right on the first one, and so you're actually listening to the second podcast, the second take of this. But it's been a joy to have you on, Pablo. Can't wait to have you on again. And hopefully our next topic, I know we'll have some good topics to talk about. Hey guys,
Yeah.
stay tuned. I'm doing a series on different cultures here in Kyrgyzstan. We have a friend from where is she from? Morocco, Pakistan, South Africa, France. So yeah, I'm gonna have them all on the show, and maybe we'll just do the input. Pretty excited, Pablo. Hey, tell everybody. Just give a shout out in Russian and to whoever you want to, and then I'll end it.
I just wanted to say thanks to Mario for having me on the podcast. I hope what I've shared today shed a bit of light on the very dark past of the USSR. And you might have some questions, and maybe we'll have to do a follow-up. But let's see. Otherwise, in Russian, спасибо, Марио, за то, что пригласил меня на подкаст. Мне было очень приятно поделиться своими воспоминаниями из детства. Я рад, что мы живем в свободном мире теперь. Это очень круто. Thank you very much. Yeah. It's very nice.
Спасибо, man. Спасибо. Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
you.
Пожалуйста.
So, hey, Rugged 33 Podcast. Thank you again. Dasvidanya. It's been good. We'll hit you guys up again. DM us if you want to hear something else about Russia, USSR, any other topics about those topics. Hit me up, man. I'll talk to you guys later. Peace out. Thanks.